Okay. Well, here we go. This, of course, is a place where you pretty much know what I'm going to say, and that is turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is, in fact, the beginning of chapter 41 of the book of Bereshit, or Genesis, and it says, it came to pass at the end, miketz, of 2 full years. And let's pause at that point since we've introduced the portion. It's called Miketz, of course, and we know it's going to have a theme that we introduced last week with this idea of dreams. There's going to be another theme that's going to show up here in a little while too. But let's do a quick recap of the semi-cliffhanger that we had last time. If you recall, two fellas come in, the butler and the chief wine steward, I guess you would say, that both have had a dream. And the butler, the baker, has a dream. And it ends up costing him his head. The wine steward, the butler, he has a dream. He is going to get restored to his position. And Joseph says to him, you know, after interpreting it for him, or as he's interpreting it for him, says, "Hey, look, I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews. Really, isn't any reason I should be put here in this dismal dungeon. So remember me when all of this comes to pass." And then the last line of the portion says, "Well, he was right. The chief butler, the guy that was the wine steward, was restored to his position. He put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. The baker, on the other hand, he was hanged, just as Joseph told him would happen. And still, the chief butler did not Zakar remember Joseph, but instead forgot him. Well, at least he forgot him for 2 full years. So thus the portion begins. At the end of those 2 full years, Pharaoh now has a dream. And let's talk about Pharaoh's dream. Turns out that it's going to be a repeated dream, very similar but not identical. He stood by the river. Okay, here come out of the river 7 cattle, well-favored, fat-fleshed. They're feeding, they're happily in the reed grass. And then behold, 7 other cattle come up out of the river, really nasty-looking, ill-favored, lean-fleshed. They stood by the other kind on the brink of the river. And then the ill-favored and lean-fleshed cattle ate up the good-looking ones. And so Pharaoh awoke. And then he slept again, and behold, a second time he had a different but similar dream. This time it's 7 ears of corn came up on one stalk, rank and good. And then behold, 7 ears, thin, blasted by the east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears, does this sound familiar, swallowed up the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. But it came in the morning to pass that his spirit was troubled. Something about this is really disturbing to him. So he sent and he called for all the magicians of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, all the wise men. And he told them the dream that he'd had. But none of them could tell Pharaoh what it meant, could interpret the dream. Then, finally, here comes the chief butler. He speaks up and he says, "You know, I make mention of my faults this day." Obviously there's some reluctance here, but he goes ahead and says, "Pharaoh was wroth with his servants. He put me in the ward of the house of the captain of the guard, me along with the chief baker. And we too had a dream, same night, one night, and we both dreamed, each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was with us a young lad, and Na'ar, a Hebrew. He was servant to the captain of the guard. We told him the dream, and he interpreted according to our dreams, each according to the dream." In other words, he gave us each an individual understanding of the dream. "And it came to pass, as he told us, so it was. I was restored to my office. Meanwhile, the other fellow, he was hanged. So Pharaoh then sent and called Joseph. And they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. He cleaned himself up. He got shaved. He changed his raiment, his clothing. He came into Pharaoh." And now, this is always interesting, and I do not want to add to or subtract from Scripture, but it's kind of fascinating because all of this does seem to happen really fast, right? And I am going to suggest, again, this is not scriptural, this is just Markology, but we've seen all along how Joseph has been favored. And nowhere do we get told that there is word of mouth passing among these folks. And yet anybody that's worked in any human kind of endeavor, whether it's a corporate entity or government or you name it, I have a strong suspicion that Pharaoh probably sent out some feelers. And the captain of the guard probably said, "Oh yeah, this fella, he's quite a young man." So we don't know that. It's pure speculation. But honestly, I would be surprised, given the things that are going to happen here, if Pharaoh doesn't do a little bit of checking up front. But regardless, the truth is, here comes Joseph. And Joseph is then told by Pharaoh, I have dreamed a dream. No one can interpret it. I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, if anything, by this time, Joseph has gotten the message, and he responds modestly, and he says, it's not in me. It's Elohim who will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now remember, it's been two full years he's been waiting to see whether the chief butler would remember him. So Pharaoh then spoke to Joseph, and he said the following, in my dream, behold, I was standing on the brink of the river, and here come up out of the river seven kine, fat-fleshed, well-favored. They fed in the reed grass. And behold, then you got seven other cattle that come up after them. And I'm going to pause just a second, because we've got another fault, and we'll correct that. Could be. I'm back in now. We'll see if it reconnects. Okay, I will. I'll keep talking for the benefit of the shoutcast uplink, which does seem to still be working. Yep. I may have to whack Pal Talk. There we go. It looks like it is finally going to come back up at long last. Okay, so we're back in the room. Do we have some ones? I think we get some ones. Okay, very good. So we're talking about Pharaoh is letting Joseph know about his dream. And where we got interrupted, we have this place where seven other cattle come up after them. Poor, ill-favored, lean flesh. I never saw anything like this in all the land of Egypt for their badness. Now the lean and ill-favored cattle then ate up the first seven fat cattle. And when they had eaten them up, you couldn't even tell that they'd been eaten. Now, they were so ill-favored as they started, just as they were at the beginning. And then I awoke. And I saw in my dream, as I went back to sleep again, obviously, behold, seven ears came up upon one stalk, full and good. And then behold, seven ears, withered, thin, blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And those thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but no one among them could declare it to me. So Joseph then says unto Pharaoh, now this is not only interesting, we're going to get a really good understanding here. He's giving a lecture. This is Dream Interpretation 101. And one of the elements, obviously, two dreams, a dream that is repeated, very important, pay attention. Says Joseph unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is echad. In other words, they are a unified whole. One reinforces the other. It's it's an indication. What Elohim is about to do, he has declared unto Pharaoh. Seven good kine are 7 years. Seven good ears are also 7 years. The dream is echad. In other words, the dream is a unity. The seven lean and ill-favored kind that came up after them are 7 years. The 7 ears blasted with the east wind. That means we're going to have 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I spoke unto Pharaoh. What Elohim is about to do, he has shown you, O Pharaoh, unto Pharaoh. So behold, there are coming 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Mitzrayim. And after those will arise 7 years of famine. And all that plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will consume the land. The plenty won't even be remembered or known in the land by reason of the degree of the famine which follows, because it's going to be something to behold. Very grievous. And that, for that reason, the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. So it's a repetition twice. Redundancy twice. You get the idea. Let everything, as Scripture later tells us, let everything be confirmed at the mouth of two or more witnesses. And Pharaoh has now had two dreams confirming. It is because the word, the debar, the thing here, is established by Elohim, and Elohim will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh look. Let him seek out a man who is two things. First use of this first word here, which is nabon. And also, chacham, wise. discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this. Let him appoint overseers over the land, take up a fifth part of the land of Egypt for each of the 7 years of plenty. So 20% basically to be stored up of each of these 7 years of plenty. Then let them gather all the food of these 7 good years that come, lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. And all the food will be for a store of the land against the 7 years of famine, which will be in the land of Egypt, so that the land does not perish as a result of the famine. Now Pharaoh said to his servants, and this thing, it says, was good, not only in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in all the eyes of all of his servants. So everybody agrees, hey, this sounds like pretty sound advice, good understanding. We'll take that to heart. Pharaoh then said to his servants, can we find anyone quite like this? A man in whom is the, literally, Ruach Elohim, the Spirit of the Almighty? Pharaoh said to Joseph, forasmuch as Elohim has shown you all of this, there is no one, in fact, so discreet and wise, ve'hacham, as you. You then shall be over my house, and according to your word shall all of my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. So then Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all of the land of Mitzrayim. So Pharaoh took off the signet ring from his hand. He put it on Joseph's hand. He arrayed him in vestures of fine linen. He put a gold chain around his neck. How's this for an elevation to high authority? Then he made him ride in the second chariot. He was in literally Air Force 2 or Chariot Force 2. And he said, you're going to ride there. And all the people cried before him, Abrech. Bend the knee, bow, in other words. And they set him over all of the land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, a knee Pharaoh, and without you shall no one lift up his hand or his foot in all the land of Egypt. So Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphenat Paneah, and he gave him his daughter Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah. He gave him to wife, or rather he presented him with a wife, Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. So now Joseph has not only got a position, he's got a wife. Joseph then went out over the land of Mitzrayim. And when all this happened, Scripture tells us Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And then Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh. He went throughout all the land of Egypt. And we're going to see that essentially what he said was going to happen has happened. Pharaoh is put Joseph in a position of authority. He's going to do what it is that he needs to do. There were 7 years of plenty, and the earth, Haaretz, brought forth in heaps, literally abundantly, in handfuls. And Joseph, as charged and as he had said, gathered up all the food from the 7 years in the land of Egypt. He laid up the food in the cities, the food of every field, which was round about in every city. He laid it all up. And he laid up corn, kind of like it was the sand of the sea, very much, until literally they had so much of it, they quit numbering it, because in fact it was without number. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the year of famine came. So during this 7 year period, he has 2 sons. We know their names, but these are the daughters. These are the sons given to him through Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. She bore them to him. Now, Joseph called the name of the firstborn, the eldest, Manasseh, for Elohim has made me forget, Nasha, my toil, and all my father's house. The second son, he called him Ephraim, because Elohim has made me fruitful, literally doubly fruitful, in the land of my affliction. So, the 7 years of plenty came to an end. And then the 7 years of famine began, according as Joseph had said. And there was famine all over the place in all the lands. But at least because of the provisions that had been stored up, there was, in fact, bread in the land of Mitzrayim. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, hey, go see Joseph, because he has said to you that, you know, what he's been on the ball here. So whatever he says to you at this point, you do. Famine was all over the face of the earth. Joseph opened up the storehouses. He sold to the Egyptians. Notice he's selling to the Egyptians. The famine was really nasty. It was sore in the land of Egypt. And all of the countries nearby, everything was within range. They all came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn because the famine was sore. Bekol ha'aretz, literally in all of the earth. Now, the next chapter, we're going to take a little bit of a leap and see what else is happening. Back to the story of the family and the descendants of Israel. So, Jacob, yeah, he's back up in Canaan, remember? Jacob saw there was, in fact, corn in Egypt. He's probably hearing about it from traders, people passing through. And he says to his sons, why are you looking at one another that way? And he said, behold, I have heard there is corn, there is food down there in Mitzrayim. So this is the first use of that word there for grain or for food stuff. It's rendered as corn in some English versions. Probably not the yellow stuff you're familiar with, but it's shabar is the word, grain. So go on down there and buy for us from there so that we might live and not die. Joseph's 10 brethren then went down to buy corn from Egypt. Wait a minute, 10 brothers? So they're headed south to go get some food stuff, some grain. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother by the same mother, his full brother, if you will, Ben-Yamin, son of my right hand, he did not get sent along with his brothers because Yaakov was concerned, lest peradventure some harm befall him. He's keeping at least one boy home. Sons of Israel then came to buy among those who came. So we got lots of people coming in to see Joseph, and his brothers turn out to be among them. The famine was, in fact, in the land of Canaan, and Joseph was governor over all the land. He was the one who sold to the people of the land, and his brethren came. Now, gee, as we read this, does it sound a bit familiar? Oh, yeah. Does sound a lot like what he saw in his dream, doesn't it? His brethren came. They bowed down to him with their faces to Haaretz. And in this case, it is Haaretz. Eretzah. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he recognized them. But he made himself strange unto them. He looks like an Egyptian. They don't recognize him. He spoke roughly with them, and he said to them, why are you here? What are you coming for? They said, well, we need to buy some food. From the land of Canaan we've come to do that, to buy food. And Joseph, it says, he recognized his brethren, but they did not recognize him. They knew him not. Because Joseph remembered the dream which he had dreamed for them. Literally, for them. And he said unto them, you're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land. Oh, no, they said. No, no, my lord. That's not at all why we're here. We're here to buy food. That's why your servants have come. We are, now listen to this too. They are going to provide what might be, nowadays it's called TMI, right? Too much information. But, hey, that's part of the plan, it would seem. We are all the son of one man. We are upright men. Your servants are not spies. And then he said to them, nope, I'm not buying it. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. You've come to spy things out, see where we're weak. Well, they said, we, your servants, are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest, he is this day at home with our father, and one is not. In other words, one has passed. Now, they don't know that they're standing here talking to the one who they think has passed. Joseph then says to them, that is it that I spoke to you. Yep, I said it. You are. You're spies. So hereby you shall be tested, proved, verified. Here's the test. As Pharaoh lives, you shall not go forth hence unless your youngest brother comes here. I want to see your youngest brother. We'll just check your story out. So send one of you. Let him go fetch your brother, and you shall be bound so that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you or not. Or else, as Pharaoh lives, surely you've confirmed it, you're spies. Then he put them all together in a ward for 3 days. Now, Joseph said unto them on the third day, this do and live. Here's a hint. For I fear Elohim. Elohim, ani yare. Okay, if you in fact are what you claim, if you're upright men, let one of your brethren remain here, bound in the prison house. But you, y'all, go on. You carry some grain back to your houses as a result of, you know, to deal with the famine here. And when you come back, you bring your youngest brother with you and unto me, so that your words can be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. And they said to one another, now, this is interesting, too. Listen to this conversation. Obviously, they're having this where Joseph is around. They said to one another, we are really guilty concerning our brother. Meaning, oh, the guy that's standing there. We don't know it. In that we saw the distress of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. That is why we're in this predicament. That's why this distress has come upon us. Reuben said to them, well, hey, didn't I tell you? Didn't I speak unto you saying, don't sin against the child? But y'all wouldn't listen. So therefore, behold, his blood is required. So Reuben speaks up, tells him, I told you so, you wouldn't listen. And they did not know, it says, because they were speaking Hebrew, which is his birth language, but they don't think anybody else can speak it around there. They didn't know Joseph is listening to him. He understands full well what they're saying. There had been an interpreter before. He was not there at this point. He turned himself around from them and wept. So, Joseph, hearing all of this, he's been waiting, if you think about it, folks, for the better part of 2 decades at this point to hear what's going on. And now he knows. He wept. He returned to them. He spoke to them. And he took Simeon from among them and bound him before their eyes. Now, think about what the implications are. Joseph knows who the firstborn is. That's Reuben. Reuben, on the other hand, just finished acquitting himself, essentially, in his brother's hearing. Who's next? Simeon. Now, by the way, this is the place where Rashi says that it's Simeon. And he makes a, you know, it's an interesting point. Certainly could be. But Rashi believes it is Simeon who was quoted as saying, here comes the dreamer. And that, at least, would be another indication of why it was Joseph might have said, yeah, let's put him in the huskow. Then Joseph commanded that their vessels, all the sacks that they had brought with them, be filled with corn, with grain. And furthermore, to put everyone's money, his kesef, his silver, put it back into the sack. And give them provision to have something to eat along the way. And this is what was done for them. So they laded up their asses with their grain, and they headed on out. As one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender when they got to the lodging place. So they've traveled for several hours. Comes time to bed down for the night. Here they are, going to give the ass some provender. And uh-oh, what's that? It's the kesef. It's the money. Here it is, right there in the mouth of the sack. He said to his brethren, my money is restored. My silver's right here. Lo, it's in my sack. And their hearts failed them. They turned trembling to one another, and they said, what is it that Elohim has done unto us? I guess they're figuring we deserve this. And they came unto Yaakov their father in the land of Canaan. So they continued on the journey, and they get back home, and they tell him all that had befallen them, and they said the following. The man of the house, the lord of the land, he spoke roughly with us, and he took us to be spies in his country. Spying out his country. And we said to him, hey, we're upright men. We're not spies. We're 12 brethren, sons of our father. One is not, meaning Joseph. And the youngest is this day home with our father in the land of Canaan. Now, let's pause here because there's an interesting thing that if we don't pay attention, and we did, we just read right by it. They came unto Jacob their father. Notice the phrase? Remember, Jacob has been renamed. I've made this point many, many times. Sometimes he's referred to as Israel. Sometimes he is still referred to as by his birth name, Yaakov, the supplanter. And it says, it addresses him at this point, references Yaakov as their father. Okay. So here's what they tell him, right? We're all the sons of one man, our father. One is not. The youngest is home with dad. The man, the lord of the land, he said to us, here's how I know, here's how I will test you guys, see whether you're what you claim or not, upright men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. You take grain, corn for the famine of your houses and go on your way. And then, if you want anything else, you better bring that youngest brother back unto me. That's how you can prove that you're not spies, but that you are in fact what you claim, upright men. And so, then will I deliver your brother, and you can have traffic in the land. Once you're okay with me, then you can come back and get more grain whenever you need it. Came to pass, as they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they, and here it is again, their father saw the bundles of kesef, they were afraid. And Yaakov, their father, said unto them, look, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph, he ain't here. He's gone. And Simeon, remember you left him down there in Mitzrayim. So you're not going to take Benjamin away from me. Upon me have all of these things come. I'm basically down three at this point. Or well, I'm down two, and I'm not going to be down three. Reuben, not necessarily helping. He thinks he is, but he's not. And remember, this is the one who later is going to lose his birthright position because he went up to, it would seem, sleep with Zilpah. He says to his father, hey, look, you can kill my two kids, my sons, if I don't bring him back to you. Deliver him to my hand, and I'll bring him back to you. Oh, yeah, that's going to make Joseph feel, or Yaakov feel a lot better, right? If you don't bring your son back, you can kill my kids. That'll make things right. Good grief. Okay, and he says, my son's not going down with you. His brother's dead. He is the only one left of that mother, of Raquel. If harm befalls him in the way which you go, you will bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. That's a famous rendering here. You'll bring my gray hairs down with sorrow to the grave. All right, chapter 43. It sounds like some time has passed. So here we go. And the famine was sore in the land. Well, the famine was already sore in the land, but I guess now it's sore again for reasons that the Scripture is going to make clear. It came to pass, they had eaten up now at this point all of that grain which they had brought up out of Egypt. And their father says to them, all right, oh man, go on down again, buy us a little more food. Now at this point, Judah says to him, speaking earnestly, that man in fact did. He earnestly warned us, saying, you're not going to see my face unless your brother is with you. So, if you'll send our brother down with us, we'll go down and buy some more food. But if you're not going to send him, it's not worth going down. We already know what's going to happen. We will not go down because the man said to us very clearly, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. Okay, so Judah speaks up. And we are back in the room again. I guess I've been kicked out and didn't even catch it that time. So sorry, I don't know how much got missed there. But Judah speaks up. And now, in chapter 43, verse 6, there's an interesting change. It says, and Israel said. You see the difference? There's got to be something very important here because this man has been addressed as their father, or Yaakov, their father, over and over again for the last chapter. But at this point, it's Israel who the Bible tells us is speaking. Why have you dealt so ill with me as to tell a man that you even had a brother? Right? You could have kept that to yourselves. Well, they said, and why would Israel be the one to ask that question? Interesting, isn't it? I think part of the reason is because at this point, Israel is now securing the future of all of the progeny. This is key to what follows. Israel says, why have you dealt so ill with me as to tell the man you even had a brother? Well, they said, the man asked us outright. He just said it. And he asked about our kin, saying, is your father yet alive? Have you got another brother? We told him, according to the tenor of these words, how could we know he was going to say, well, then bring that other brother on down here. And then it says, Judah said unto who? Israel, his father. Send the lad with me. Now, let's pause there. Because this too is fascinating. Some of the Midrash will say this is the point where Judah says he will take care of Benjamin, son of my right hand, the tribe, basically in perpetuity. And what we see, if you recall, there were three tribes, but really two that were primarily in the land of Judah during the time of the Mashiach, after the separation, the 10 lost tribes were exiled. And those two? Judah and Benjamin. And of course there were Levites that were scattered throughout the land, some in the south, some in the north. So Judah and Benjamin, the two primary tribes, they're in the south. That's going to happen a long time in the future, but it's interesting. Looks like the situation is laid out right here. Judah says to Israel his father, send the lad with me. We will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and you. Ahem. And our little ones. Judah is taking authority, and it's not just for his son Benjamin, brother Benjamin, Yaakov's son at this point. I will be surety for him. Here you go. I'll be surety for him. Of my hand you can require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame. What? Ha olam, forever. I am taking perpetual responsibility here. Their father Israel is going to speak next. And Jacob hears these final words from his son Judah. Look, if we hadn't lingered here, we would have been on down there by now for the second time. So we're here, and we probably could have gone back down already. Okay, their father Israel then says to them, if it be so now, do this. So, notice he is being referred to again as Israel, and he is evidently on board. He is now offering an amendment to the plan, some sound advice. Here's what you're going to do. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your vessels. Carry down a present for this man. A little balm, a little honey, some spicery, some ladanum, nuts, some almonds. Oh, yeah, and take double the money in your hand. The money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks, you carry that back. Peradventure, it was an oversight. So it's interesting here, and when I read this, I will admit there is a little bit of ambiguity, but remember, if they stole, even if it was inadvertent, it sounds like there's an understanding of the Torah provision. You know, we're going to double it up the second time. But regardless, they're going to take the original money, and they're going to take more money for more corn, more grain. And that's at least double. It might be that they're taking double to pay for the next time, plus the original two. But regardless, they are making sure that if there was an oversight, we're going to correct it. Take your brother too. Arise, go again, back on down to the man. And may El Shaddai give you mercy before the man, that he may release unto you your older brother, yep, Simeon, and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, well, then, I am bereaved. So he is not only allowing it, he's trying to deal with the possibility of the loss. So the men took all the stuff that their dad, Israel at this point, had said, the presents. They took double the money in their hand, and they took Benjamin, and they rose up, they went on down to Egypt, and eventually they stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of the house the following: bring the man into the house. Kill the beast. Slaughter the food. We're going to lay on a feast here. Prepare the meat, for these men shall dine with me at noon. The men did as Joseph bade, and they brought the men, turns out that's his brothers, right, into Joseph's house. Now, Joseph's brothers, they were afraid because they had been brought into Joseph's house, and they said, uh-oh, it's because of the silver that was returned in our sacks first time around, that he might seek some occasion to have something against us, fall upon us, take us for bondmen, and our asses too. Our asses are in a sling here, in other words. They came near to the steward of Joseph's house. They spoke unto him at the door of the house, and they said, oh, my Lord, we came down indeed first time to buy food. And it came to pass, when we got home, we looked in our sacks, and oh, no, there's our silver. Every man's money, his silver was right there in the mouth of his sack, full weight. We have brought it back just to show our good faith. We're bringing it right on back. The money that we have, the other silver that we brought down in our hand to buy food, we got that too. And we don't know who it was, by the way, put the money back in our sacks. Now, I don't know whether the fellow they're talking to knows. Joseph certainly knows. And he said, peace be unto you. Fear not. Fear not. Because your Elohim, the Elohim of your father. Isn't this interesting? There's been a... This is probably a little bit out of character for an Egyptian, but he is a servant of who? They don't know it yet, but yeah, there is a common thread here. Fear not. Your Elohim, the Elohim of your father, has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And he brought Simeon out to them. The men brought the men, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. So basically, the brothers are coming on in. He gave them water, washed their feet, gave their asses provender, and they made ready their presents. So they're ready for the feast is coming. We're going to give Joseph all the stuff we brought against his coming at noon, because they had heard that they're going to be dining with him, eating bread there. Now, Joseph came home. He brought them. They brought the present to him, which was in their hand. They brought it into the house, and bowed down to him to the earth. And he asked them about their welfare. And he said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he yet alive?" You know that Joseph is hanging on the answer to this question. They said, "Yep, thy servant, our father, he's well, and he is yet alive." They bowed their head, and they made obeisance. And he lifted up his eyes, and now Joseph sees Benjamin, his brother, his mother's son, and he says, "Is this that younger brother of whom you spoke unto me?" And then he said, directing his words to Benjamin, "God be gracious unto you. Elohim be gracious unto you, my son." Now at this point, it says Joseph made haste because his heart yearned for his younger brother. And he needed some place where he could weep in private. So he entered into his bedchamber and he wept there. And he washed his face. He came out and he refrained himself. And he said, "Okay, come on, lay on the food. Set on the bread." So they set on for him by himself. So essentially, what it tells us is that the Egyptians didn't eat with him. They eat by themselves because it's not toward for an Egyptian to eat, to break bread with the Hebrews. That would be an abomination unto him. And Joseph has to keep up appearances here. So they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, the youngest according to his youth, and the men marveled one to another because they're thinking to themselves, how is it that just by sheer chance the birth order here comes out? You can guess that between the oldest and the youngest, it might be kind of easy. But how about, all the other 10 in the middle there? Portions were taken from before them. So everybody gets some food to eat, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs. And they drank, and they made merry with him. Now the last chapter here is in the Torah portion this week is the one that I'm going to say is going to bring another cliffhanger, probably the cliffhanger of all of these. And admittedly, cliffhangers have a tendency to be this way. It's not quite as satisfying because we don't see a resolution to the story. But here's the setup, and it goes like this. Now Joseph commands the steward of his house, and he says, "Fill up the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry." And he's going to have them do it again. "Put every man's silver back in the mouth of his sack." Oh, yeah. "And my silver goblet, put that there too, in the mouth of the youngest." Okay? I'm going to put my silver goblet in the youngest, in other words, in Benjamin's sack, along with his money for grain, his silver. And the servant did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. So, as soon as it's light in the morning, men were sent away, they and their asses. And when they'd gone out of the city, they weren't yet too far out of sight. Joseph says to his steward, "You go on, you follow after those men. And when you overtake them, you say, 'Why have you rewarded evil for good? Is it not this in which my Lord drinks, and whereby indeed he divines? Why have you done this evil by doing such?'" So the servant went out, he overtook them, and he spoke the words as he was commanded. And they said to him, "Wait a minute, why is my Lord speaking this way to us? Far be it from your servants, we should do any such thing. Behold, the silver, the kesef, which we found in our sack's mouth, we brought it back to you out of the land of Canaan. Why then should we now steal out of your Lord's house either silver or gold? For, so here you go, with whomsoever of your servants," meaning us, "it's found, this thing you're looking for, let him die. And we too then, the remainder, will be our Lord's, my Lord's bondmen." So the servant says, "All right, you asked for it, you got it. Now let it also be with you according to your words. The man with whom it is found shall be my bondsman, and you shall be blameless." So he's basically saying, "Okay, I'm going part way with you, but I'm not going to be quite as draconian as you guys are saying. I'm just wanting the one, just the culprit here. So that man, the one that it's found with, he'll be my bondsman. The rest of you go on your way." Then they hastened. Every man took his sack down. They put him on the ground, and each one of them opened his sack. Sure enough, they searched, beginning with the eldest all the way down, leaving off at the youngest. And there it is. The goblet was found in Benjamin's sack. Oh, no. This is exactly what Dad was afraid of, right? They rent their clothes. Every man laded his ass. And they returned to the city. So, going to go right back where we just left. Judah and his brethren then came to Joseph's house. He was still there. And they fell before him on the ground. Notice, they fell before him on the ground. This is now the third time that dream has been fulfilled, one way or another. Joseph then says to them, "What is it you've done here? What deed have you done? Didn't you know that a man like me, that I can indeed divine? And Judah said, well, what should we say to you, right? What can we possibly say? Hey, we've been caught. Here we are. Man, there's nothing for us to say. How can we speak? How could we possibly clear ourselves? Elohim has found out the Torahlessness, the iniquity of your servants. Behold, here we are. We are now my Lord's bondsmen, both we and also he in whose hand the cup was found. So all of us, we're here. We're here to serve. And he said, this meaning Joseph, far be it from me that I would do anything like that. The man in whose hand the goblet is found, that one, he shall be my bondsman. As for the rest of you, y'all head him up, move him on out. You go in peace unto your father. Going home. And guess what, folks? At that, the Torah portion ends. And that's a cliffhanger. And I'll just leave the final word here with this. We're going to see next week how a test that has been laid out by Joseph and arguably as part of the plan of Elohim all along, the test is not only going to play out, it's going to come out, I think, probably better than Joseph could possibly have foreseen, or at least would have been willing to believe, perhaps, although it certainly is better in all these senses. Oh, and one more thing. I refer to this as the place where Judah mans up. And that, too, is a really good thing. So we will pick it up right there next week.